Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Canadian saxophonist, composer, and educator, Kirk MacDonald. This veteran jazz cat has been at it for decades and always knew since he was a kid that music was going to be the path that he would etch. Over the years, he has played with the biggest names in jazz, like Tom Harrell and Pat LaBarbera. Over the course of our conversation, he talked about what he is teaching the new young talent in Canada via the classroom these days, along with a very busy schedule and life he lives as a very fulfilled jazz man. Dig it, my friends.
Hey, it's Joe Domino with Neon Jazz.
Hey, Joe Domino. How are you?
Hey, man. I'm good. What's going on?
Well, not much. Sitting around waiting to talk to you.
Right on. Hey,
yeah.
Thank you for taking a little time out. I really appreciate it. It's very much so appreciated.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah. No, it's nice to hear from you and glad to do this. So.
Right on. So I want to start off by asking you, what has been going on with you lately?
Well, it's been busy. I've had new record I recorded last summer, quartet record, with actually Pat LaBarbera guesting on some tracks. It's called Vista Obscura. So that won the Juno Award up here, which is great.
Yeah.
And the previous record was nominated and won another Canadian Music Award up here called East Coast Music Awards. So you know, both those things are out. That's a quintet record with actually a couple of guests on it. Tom Harrell plays on it, and Dennis McCrell, and Neil Swainson and Brian Dickinson. So those records are getting a little bit of recognition. And I'm busy playing and teaching. I teach at Humber College here in Toronto. And we're just winding down. We got another couple of days, and then the semester's over. Then things get busy, you know. I got some performances in town next week. Then I go off to Korea for about 10 days. And then coming back, and I'm starting to work on my next recording, which is going to be a big band recording.
Okay, great.
So we're going to go in and read through some things in a few days, just do some prep stuff on that. And so we'll be doing 3 days at a local club here called the Rex, and just to play through the material and then recording that.
Wonderful.
So that's happening, and then some festivals at the end of June. A little bit more teaching in July. We have a summer workshop that we do out of Humber College. I act as the artistic director for that. So that's happening mid-July, and we've got a few guests coming up. So Peter Bernstein is coming up the first week, and Dick Oates will be coming up the second week. So I'll be doing some things in town with those guys as well.
Wonderful.
And what else? August, Harold Mayburn's coming up. We'll be doing an official CD release here at a club called the Jazz Bistro. And that's quartet with Harold Mayburn and Neil Swainson on bass and Andre White from Montreal on drums. So we're doing that. And I think there'll be a few little festival things around that, just in and around the Toronto area, some smaller towns. And then we're going to do the same thing at Jazz at Lincoln Center in October 20th. We're doing
right
a release
on
down there at Dizzy's. So that's kind of what's happening. You know, it's very busy. A lot of things have lined up quite nicely lately. And, you know, a nice mix of things, different projects and, you know, and getting out to do some stuff.
Yeah, sounds great. So did you grow up in Toronto?
No, I grew up in Nova Scotia.
Okay. So
Yeah. What
was it about growing up in Nova Scotia that kind of fostered this love of jazz that you've had throughout your life?
Well, I think, you know, the first time I really became aware of it was when I was in junior high school, you know, and playing in the band program. My music teacher there, a small town called New Waterford, Nova Scotia. It's a small mining town right on the Atlantic coast. The music teacher there was very encouraging, and he had good record collection, and he, you know, he kind of turned us on to that, and that's where it started. That was around 12 or so, you know, 11, yeah, about 12 years old, and there were a number of us that were kind of into that and played together, and then just got involved in the community, playing with some older musicians in the community there. There was, you know, a community big band, and just, you know, checking out recordings and playing. So that's kind of where it started. I went down to Berkeley when I was 15 for a summer course. And from that point on, I mean, I was always, you know, kind of pursuing it.
So when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
A musician. There was never really any doubt about that. You know, I actually started playing professionally quite young, you know, in what they would call basement bands, but except that we were all working, you know, and there were some kids in the neighborhood playing the music of the day. You know, this was like, late 60s, I guess, you know, like 1968, 69, I started. And, you know, we would do what they would call sock ops. And that was, you know, that was like, you know, for kids like 10 to 12 years old, 10 to 14 years old, and they do these Saturday afternoon matinees, you know. So that, you know, that kind of started a long time ago. And from there, you know, I get into some other things, like, you know, playing jazz in the community and studying and lessons and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. Your bio says you've established a reputation as one of Canada's leading saxophonists with over 100 performances and compositions on 24 cities, as a leader and as a sideman. That's the description on your site. How would you describe who you are and what you've done in your career?
Oh, boy, that's... That's a tough question. I mean, you know, what I try to do is, and I think I've always kind of gone this route. My last couple of years of high school, I had a fantastic teacher who was also a great saxophonist. His name was Don Palmer. And he was originally from Cape Breton as well, but had moved to New York in the late 50s, around the time I was born, actually, 1959. And he went down and he studied with Lenny Tristano and Lee Konitz and a number of other people. So as I was really getting serious about music, you know, I had the good fortune of studying with Don, you know, my last 2 years of high school, from the ages of about 15 to 17. And one of the things that he always instilled in me, and I think it, you know, it had a lot to do with, I think, the connection with Tristano and Warren Marsh and Lee Konitz and those kind of people, was to really try and follow your own path with music. You know, so even in the early days, I mean, for me, it was always about just trying to find my own way with things. And you know, along the way, composing became a big part of that for me to help, you know, sort of develop myself as a musician, and just kind of set that path in motion. I mean, you know, I love playing standards and things like that too, and I spent a lot of time, you know, learning tunes and playing, you know, the Great American Songbook and jazz standards and things like that. But you know, I was always interested in creating my own music as well. So, which very, very much influenced by that, you know, whether it be like Horace Silver or Cole Porter or Gershwin or John Coltrane or Wayne Shorter. You know, the aesthetic was about trying to find my own way, you know, in, you know, just the realm of in the history of the music, you know. So I don't think that's really changed, you know, in almost 40 years of playing, you know.
Sure.
I think the music has changed, but the general aesthetic, I think, is very similar for me still. So you know, I like to write my own music, create my own situations. You know, I like to write for a lot of different configurations as well, you know. So
yeah. And speaking of over the 40 years, you've had the chance to play with folks like Dave Young. You mentioned Tom Harrell, Pat LaBarbera.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that you played with over the years. What has that been like to be around such jazz luminaries and greatness and climbing on stage and doing that thing you love so much with these guys? What's that been like?
It's fantastic. You know, I mean, I think my early years here were great. You know, I mean, I truly had some fantastic mentors, and I think a lot of the learning that I've been able to do over my life is really been on the bandstand, you know, and, you know, one of the first people I started working with here in a jazz context was Dave Young. And, you know, he had a couple of different groups that I worked with, and this is going back to the early 80s. And we used to tour Canada and do things like that, and that was great. There was also an incredible drummer who hasn't recorded that much by the name of Claude Ranger. And I don't know if you're familiar with his music, but he was someone else that was very important to me in those early years as well. And I had worked with his groups for a couple of years around the same time, early 80s. And then people like Sam Noto, you know, I had a long association with Sam. I played, you know, on and off with him at least 15 years, you know, dating back to the mid 80s.
Yeah.
And Pat, of course. I mean, Pat was one of the first people that, Pat LaBarbera, that I, you know, I had a few lessons with him when I first moved to town. This is going back late 70s. So, you know, we to this day have a group together, where we, focus on the music of John Coltrane. And we've been doing this, annually for close to 25 years. You know, yeah. We'll do three nights at a local club here in town. And so, you know, those kind of associations have been fantastic. And then, you know, of course, with, you know, visiting players coming through from time to time, there's an opportunity to do some special projects and things like that. You know, so it's great. It's wonderful.
So speaking of Coltrane, who would you consider some of your jazz heroes?
Well, we could start right there. You know, I mean, John Coltrane, I think, was one of the greats of music of all time. You know, the aesthetic was just amazing. You know, just to this day, it still, you know, just moves me greatly. Charlie Parker, I think, was probably one of my first influences, and I think that was really the spark for me that got me interested in jazz music, was listening to Charlie Parker records when I was 12 and 13 years old. You know, I said, oh, okay, this is really something. Yeah. Those guys for sure. Lee Konitz, the whole Tristano thing was something that I came to at an early age, so I was very much influenced by Lenny Tristano, Lee Konitz, Warren Marsh, Joe Henderson, you know, all the greats, you know, Hank Mobley, and even going back, you know, Lester Young, Sonny Rollins, incredible player. And you know, those are saxophone players. You know, Miles, all the bands that he had were fantastic. George Coleman, you know, Wayne Shorter, you know, and all the rhythm sections that played with those guys were great. You know, Bill Evans, was great as well. You know.
Yeah. You know, we're coming from the home of Charlie Parker here in Kansas City, and the thing that always amazes me is everybody in one way or another references Charlie Parker. He's kind of that Mozart of jazz. Why do you think Charlie Parker, and then a limited amount of time that he was around, and as long as he's been gone, that he has stood that proverbial test of time?
Well, you know, he was just so great and so natural at what he did. You know, I mean, his sense of line was unbelievable. His sound was great. His time feel was fantastic. You know, he's one of those standalone people. Like, to me, there's Charlie Parker, there's Art Tatum, and those guys are, you know, just geniuses of the music. You know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, like, those are the two for me that are kind of untouchable, you know. Where someone like John Coltrane went with the music, you know, that was unbelievable too, but I think that was more an effort of, you know, hard work and determination, and that kind of developed in another way, I think, as compared to somebody like Bird, you know. But that is in many ways still the working vocabulary, you know, like the bebop vocabulary when you think about Charlie Parker and Bud Powell and, you know, the way they dealt with lines and harmony and things like that. That's still very much a part of the music today.
Absolutely. So you've been around for decades. You've been on a lot of stages around the world. How do you approach gigs today versus the way you approached it years ago? Were there nerves that you don't have? What has the wisdom over the years taught you in your approach to the stage these days?
Well, I try to be as much in the moment as possible these days. I think once you've been playing for a long time that I suppose you develop a little bit more confidence and are able to kind of relax with things a bit more on the bandstand and try and get to the music in a more relaxed way, more natural kind of way. You know, it's almost nice to prepare and feel that you're, you know, comfortable with the instrument and things like that, but not always possible.
Right.
You know, I think there's more of just a connection with everyday life. You know, I mean, I'm 55 years old. I've been playing the saxophone since I've been 10.
Yeah,
you know, so it's almost like another limb or something. You know, like there's a certain connection that I think you can count on, and I think the longer you play and the more you play, that there's more of a connection with the instrument. Like when things are going really well, it's almost like the instrument is not really there. You're just kind of communicating, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's something that you know, takes a long time to develop. I also think it's something that you know, after a number of years, you know that connection is more or less going to be there, you know.
Yeah.
Which, you know, can allow you to just kind of cool out a little bit with things and just play, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So another facet to your approach to music is as an educator. Who taught you the most about music? You touched on some teachers, but is there someone that really, like, gave you a huge dose of learning that you always remember?
Well, I would have to say my first teacher or my first real serious teacher, Don Palmer, was hugely influential, you know. Pat LaBarbera was great. I studied a bit with Lee Konitz in the early 80s. That was fantastic. I studied a little bit with George Coleman around that same time, and he was great. I mean, everybody kind of has their own thing, and I think a lot of the great lessons I got were on the bandstand, you know, like playing night after night with someone like Sam Noto or Claude Ranger, you know. And those weren't formal lessons. That was just, it was there, you know, and you kind of walk away from those situations and you think about what came up short and what didn't. So, like, a lot of the best lessons I had were just playing and trying to be aware of, you know, how things went down, you know, and kind of taking mental notes of that and trying to work on the lessons from the previous night kind of thing too, you know.
Yeah.
I think the longer that one plays, the more that the learning comes from internal sources rather than external.
Absolutely.
You know, like in the formative years, you're going to somebody to study, and they may talk about different concepts, or they may give you specific material to work on. But as time goes by, you need to look inside yourself to find that direction and where to go with things, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of all of the learnings over the years, you know, whether it's been on stage or in the classroom, what do you try to teach the kids that you instruct in the classroom?
Well, you know, I teach a lot of different level students. I actually am involved with I teach at Humber College in Toronto, and I also am part of the faculty on the community music school, or at the community music school, which is a program for high school kids. And so, you know, I deal with, you know, teenage kids. I deal with students in their 20s, sometimes professional players. You know, I think the fundamentals are really important. So you know, oftentimes with people that are lacking vocabulary, I mean, I'll be dealing with vocabulary. You know, I think a lot of teaching, too, is about trying to work with conceptual ideas, basically trying to, you know, have students be in touch with their own creativity too, you know. So trying to be flexible, trying to be loose, but also putting some real information out there, you know. And you know, a lot of it has to do with the fundamentals, you know, getting a good sound, playing with a good time feel, learning repertoire, thinking a little bit about, you know, chord changes, chord scale relationships, you know, learning tunes, listening, you know, like, you know, a lot of learning has to do with your perspective, you know, and what you listen to, you know, pointing out, you know, great players to check out and classic recordings that's important for people to hear, things like that, you know.
Sure. So you're teaching the future of Canadian jazz. How is the scene in Canada these days, the jazz scene? How is it doing?
It's doing great. You know, I've been listening to students. They're doing their final performances at Humber this week. And, you know, the students are playing great. There's a very high level of playing happening. There's a lot going on in the community as well. We've got, you know, we've got a few clubs in town that have music every night. And then there's some clubs where a lot of the younger musicians play as well, you know, and so they're working their thing out as well.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So
there's some great players here.
So let me ask you, what is the greatest thing about waking up every day?
Living, I think, is you know, it's pretty nice, you know.
Yeah,
I'm not sure there's one thing. I mean, you know, I wake up and I get busy doing things that I do. You know, I enjoy time with my family. If I'm teaching, then you know, I'll kind of look forward to that, or playing, or practicing, or writing. You know. For me, there's a lot going on, so it's like that changes from day to day, you know. It's, I mean, just getting up and trying to deal with what's in front of you, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to reference a famous Canadian here when I say Michael J. Fox, and I'm going to give you a visual here that you can hop into a DeLorean, and you can go to any time period in the history of jazz and watch a show. What show would you love to see? What musician would you love to catch live?
Well, I've never heard Charlie Parker live. I've never heard John Coltrane live. Those, you know, those would be two that would be big on my list. I suppose someone like Art Tatum would be unbelievable. But I also, you know, I mean, I'm living in this time, so
yeah.
You know, I'd like to deal with things that are happening now.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, you've won a lot of awards. You mentioned your Juno Award at the top of the interview.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any award, not that's been better than another, but just one that kind of hit you at a particular point in your life, and you're like, man, I really remember getting that award?
Well, I think that, maybe the first time I won a Juno, I thought was kind of a thrill, you know. And I was actually at the awards presentation, but missed receiving the award because they had this reception in front of it, and I ended up going to the award show a little late. So
yeah.
So I sat through the show and I had no idea who had actually won the award, you know, and I was going to my seat and somebody had yelled out that I had just won a Juno Award, but I had no idea whether they were pulling my leg or not. But you know, any kind of recognition is always nice. It doesn't really change the fact that you're doing the work anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like awards are fantastic, but the fact of the matter is, I'm thinking about my next record right now and the music and this and that. And so those things are, they kind of come after the fact. So in some ways the work is already done.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
So I mean, it's great, but you know, if one is thinking about moving ahead with things, then it's like, okay, that's great, you know, to get this recognition. Fantastic. But you know, you're already off to somewhere else, you know?
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you've spent your career dedicated to jazz. Why do you love jazz so much?
Well, I like what it represents. I mean, I think it represents freedom of expression, you know. I like to be able to express myself. I think that as an art form, it's wide open, you know, in terms of where you want to go with things. You know, you're really only limited by your own lack of imagination. I think one of the things for me, and I think this still holds true today, and this is the potential to continue growing musically.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a really, really long curve there where you know, you can live your life and still aspire to move on and continue evolving, you know, as a musician and as a person, you know. So that's always been a real attraction of this music for me, and you know, the fact that it just allows for so many individual voices, you know, from so many different parts of the world and cultures to express themselves. You know, it's like these days it's become such a melting pot, you know, of different influences from so many different cultures, and so there's always something fresh and new happening with the music, and
yeah,
it's continuing to evolve, you know. And I think that's a wonderful thing, and for me that's very inspiring. And so I just try and keep going with it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're an always evolving artist, very, very forward thinking, and by no means are you anywhere near being done. But if you think, how would you want the world to remember your contribution to music? Is there anything that comes to mind that you would love in the annals of the history of jazz, they come across your name, that you would like for them to remember what you've done and all of these decades that you've spent entertaining fans?
Well, you know, I'm just trying to do my own thing, you know. I'd like to think that I've always approached the music with integrity, tried to be myself in the music, you know. I'm definitely coming from an incredibly rich tradition. You know, I feel honored to be able to do what I do, you know, very thankful for, you know, the legacy of the music that I've been able to grow up listening to and hopefully become a part of that, you know. So, I just want to lend my own voice to what I do, you know.
Final question. Do you have a particular memory of something really nice that a fan said, something that a compliment that really blew you away?
Nothing comes to mind. I mean, you know, over the years, I've had people who, you know, have, you know, related to me that, you know, my music has made a huge difference in their life and things like that. Or, you know, I heard you when I was 14 years old, and that's why I wanted to do what I do, you know, or something like that. But nothing specific, you know.
Thank you for your time. It was wonderful. I appreciate it.
Okay, Joe, thank you. My pleasure.
Take it easy.
All the best, now. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York, Kansas City, and spots all over America, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Kirk McDonald for his time, music, and Canadian cool. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino on the iTunes Store, or you can always visit the neonjazz.blogspot.com for all things Neon Jazz. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Neon Jazz.